Hello and welcome back in to the Long Shot Podcast. We have a very special rendition of the show. We have a best of 2021. Some of our favorite memories curated for all of you by us. And just a nice little trip down memory lane.
I got to be honest, Dunk. When I look back at this year, I was pretty stressed out each week about these episodes, like just making sure that we did a good job, making sure we handled it. This was all such a new experience for us. But now that we're at the end and we've looked back and gone through these clips, it has really helped me appreciate just how much awesome stuff we've done this year. I mean, it's just been amazing. And it was really hard to whittle down our favorite, you know, stuff into like a hour episode. But this is our favorite stuff. And I think it's an amazing way to put a little bow on the year. It's something that we're going to be able to look back on with like an action-packed best of Long Shot Pod. Pretty special stuff.
You said that beautifully. It has been a challenge to pick out our favorite memories because there have been so many. Also interested in hearing some of your guys' favorite stuff. So please leave some feedback on that. But you know, prior to getting to this little best of series, also want to address just the fact that, you know, we haven't released an episode in the last 6 or so weeks. And basically, you know, we've been reached out to a bunch, whether it be through social media or people coming up to me, you know, saying, when's the pod coming back? Which, by the way, we greatly appreciate. We have certainly felt that we have been missed, which is a nice feeling, I might say. To basically address it fully, we put the podcast on pause for a variety of reasons, but the main one being is that we want this podcast, first and foremost, we want to enjoy this podcast. We want to enjoy this experience, and we feel that when we do, that is when you get the best version of this podcast as well. And just with everything going on, we were originally going to take a 2-week hiatus right around Thanksgiving, and it just kind of naturally snowballed into more weeks. And it's created this now situation that we're in where we're excited and eager to come back. And we've also felt that you guys are all excited for us to come back as well. So, you know, for all you people out there who think that me doing a podcast is somehow impacting my play on the court. You can kick rocks, pound sand, whatever you want to call it. If anything, what I've enjoyed most about this podcast is the release from you know, the day-to-day grind of being an NBA player, which I love, by the way. But just the opportunity to have something, another avenue to create a relationship with people that support me. And that is all of you. So we're excited to be coming back. We really are in 2022. And we really hope you enjoy this best of 2021. Episode 32, Moritz Wagner. We're in Washington, D.C., third or fourth quarter. And I had hit a couple. Whoever was guarding me decided to get a little physical.
Who was guarding you?
I honestly don't remember.
Who was guarding you? I don't remember, but I also
maybe Troy Brown. I don't know.
But Duncan X, like, yeah, obviously, yeah, we got physical. Yeah, somebody got physical.
Anyways, I did kind of like my classic, like, yeah, I was gonna say, push off to create space, which I usually don't get called for. There was a little bit of a, you know, embellishment on the reaction to the defense, kind of threw us back. I get called for an offensive foul.
You don't flop in the NBA.
Yeah. We won't talk about that. I get called for an offensive foul. Obviously, I adamantly disagree. And I'm starting to walk back. And of course, Mo, like, that's Mo's favorite thing in the world, right? To see me have a turnover, cost my team a possession. So he kind of like claps. He does the claps in my face and then bumps me.
No. Hold on. That's not. I told him it's about damn time that he gets that call, because Duncan does this every time, as he should.
But you bumped me.
I did not bump you, buddy. I walked up to you.
We're going
to
pull up the clip.
Yeah, we can pull up the clip. It's all good.
He initiates the contact.
I did not. That's why he got the technical, because he pushed me.
I never gotten a technical. First of all, it was a double technical, first of all.
Yeah, which I did not deserve.
I had never gotten a technical
before. We should play we should play my, what's it called? The audio message I sent to the MPPA after the game where I argue that technical.
Did you actually?
We actually.
100% I argue that call.
We both got money back for the technical.
So for
at the same, really?
For people who maybe don't know this, if you get a technical in the NBA, it's a $2,500 fine and you can appeal any technical. So in that one, my appeal was, it was my friend and we were just kind of messing around. Now, in the moment, I was absolutely pissed off and probably deservedly got a technical. But he bumped me. In that moment, it wasn't like we were playing an NBA game. It was like Mo in like open gym or something just like was being an asshole and I just like shoved you because you're being an asshole.
And I will say it was also a little too easy. I'm not going to lie. Just like knowing you, like it was just too easy. Like just, I knew if somebody else would have done it, you wouldn't have pushed that guy. You would have just walked back.
No, because it was you.
Yeah, 100%.
It was entirely strategic on you.
Honestly, quality
gamesmanship.
Yes, and the reason I didn't get the whole technical back is because I was being provocative. That's like the reason I get as an instigator.
Provocative. You are provocative.
As an instigator, I guess you deserve a technical foul. But it made me proud a little bit that I didn't know it was your first one. But
my first ever. Actually, I got one in Summer League.
That does not count.
Yeah. It doesn't really count.
You get 10 fouls at Summer League.
So how many technicals have you had just in your life playing basketball?
I had one other. It was fifth grade at a Rochester, New Hampshire Christmas tournament.
Oh no, not Christmas.
My mom was in the crowd. I had a travel late in the game. I slammed the ball down. It bounced over my head. I was a fifth grader. A little bold by the ref to tee me up. He teased me up. And
technical fouls in the fifth grade?
Yeah. Like, guy, this isn't about you.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like,
also, it's about the kids.
It's Christmas.
Anyways, he teased me up. My mom, I've made some mistakes in my life. Never before has she been as disappointed in me as then when I got a technical in a fifth grade Christmas tournament.
That's awesome.
She was mortified and she crushed me on the drive home for days actually after the fact. How unacceptable it was, how I was embarrassing her. And then ever since then, I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to get any technicals. And then Moritz comes around and in front of 18,000 people on national television, 18,000 people in the arena and then on national television as well. He makes me commit a technical.
There weren't 18,000 people at that game. First
probably
of all.
Not, honestly.
Secondly, so you're telling me that's your second technical ever?
Summer League.
That
would be my third.
We're not going to count that one.
Now, Mo, on the other hand.
I only had two technicals in my life, too. So
Mo has plenty of technicals, and I've witnessed a whole handful of them firsthand.
So, I mean, first of all, in college, I had two technicals. They were both double technicals.
Really? That's it?
That's it. So that's what bothers me. Like people come up to me, like I get technicals quicker too because they think I'm like an asshole or something. I'm like trying to be a nice guy to everybody.
You're provocative.
Okay. I mean, like we can only push this shtick so far. Yeah,
You're scrappy. I think scrappy is the word.
How is doing your patented behind the back move, shoving somebody off and then yelling, you can't fucking guard me? How is that being a nice guy? Please tell me.
But that does not deserve to get a technical quicker than a normal nice guy like you. Like
that's just because the joy of basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Just because you shoot it from half court doesn't mean like you deserve a technical less than me.
I think it's more.
That I'm very familiar with the process of fighting technical fouls.
Wait, you got ejected, by the way.
I did get ejected.
Once you get ejected, you lose all ground argue. Yeah.
That being said, that was absolutely ridiculous. That ejection, it was a Madison Square Garden.
Wait, what did Scott Brixton say?
No, that was...
This is an all-time.
This is amazing. I felt so terrible. I was like embarrassed. And Scott Brooks just goes... So, hold on. I got a double... The first one was a double technical, which I didn't deserve on Julius Randle. I set an illegal screen. It's all fine. Like, I do that. We do that. That shit happens, right? So, Julius Randle walks up to me, does the tough guy thing, deservingly so. It's his gym. Do whatever you want to do. I'm meditating. Literally, I do not say a word. And he walks up to me. Again, no hard feelings. We both get a technical. Fine with me. I don't give a shit. That being said, I also can't afford as many technicals as he can, so.
Pockets look a little different.
It's a little different. So literally 20 or 2 minutes later, it felt like just like right afterwards, I get another foul. I'm about to get subbed out. And I'm saying to myself, man, that's bullshit. The ref stands right there, doesn't even see my face, and thinks I'm talking to him. Gives me a technical foul and like ejects me. Right in front of our bench. And Coach Brooke, I was like, dude, like I was low-key talking to you about subbing me out right now. And Coach Brooks just goes, like, I don't know if you know Coach Brooks, like, he's not a man of, like, a lot of words. Like, he'll just tell you what to do very simply in a very, like, straight way. Just, just get the fuck out of the gym. and used to, the next thing you see is just, like, taking off. I was so embarrassed. I just ran straight out of the gym. I was like, dude, this is so fucking embarrassing.
I love how, like, in those moments, you'd, like, hopefully expect your coach to be, like, lobby for you.
Right.
Like, I know. Like, these refs are terrible. No, he's like, just get the fuck out of here.
Episode 9, Mailbag.
The other day, we were driving around, and there were some kids out in the driveway playing basketball. And we thought, oh,
well, let me just take this. We were driving around Miami. We were picking up some food, and I see these two kids.
Wait, why can't I tell the story?
Well, just because I just want to set the stage.
I'm going to give my version of it, but go on.
We see these two kids playing basketball, and I just had them all. I was like, dude, wouldn't it be funny if I just, like, pulled up and just, like, asked for a jumper? I was in the passenger seat. I was like, shot a quick jump shot, like, said what's up, hopped back in the car and left.
Remember when the dunk challenge thing was a thing?
That's right.
It was like driving by and you'd run out and dunk in somebody's driveway and then get back in the car. That's kind of the vision we had.
Right.
But with a jump shot.
Yes. And I thought it would be this, like, cool moment for these kids. And, you know, you're hyping me up. You're You're like, oh, yeah.
It's going to make sick. This kid's week.
This is going to be awesome. I get out of my car. I ask for the ball. The kid is like... startled and confused and is like just kind of like weirded out, like, who's this random guy getting out of a car asking me for the ball that I'm playing with? He like reluctantly throws me the ball. I shoot, I miss.
I think you might have airballed.
I might have airballed. I don't know. Wasn't regulation. I miss. There's like this uncomfortable moment, like, in, you know, in your head, it's like you get out, you like swish it, and it's like, yo, oh my gosh, is that Duncan? Kid doesn't even recognize me, doesn't even care at all. There's this awkward moment where I'm just standing. I kind of look back to you of like, dude, what do? I just get in the car and we drive off.
It's just some strange man asks for a jumper, misses it, and just leaves.
Kid has no idea.
They had absolutely no idea. So, yeah, maybe we have an overinflated view of your celebrity status in Miami.
It must have been the mask. I think I was wearing a mask. Kid didn't recognize the mask, whatever it was.
Yeah, buddy, I'm sure it was the mask.
I will say it's somewhat scarred me. I certainly won't be pulling up to any courts and taking any jump shots anymore, because that was a shot to the ego.
Episode 28, Udonis Haslam.
I think, I've kind of taken the approach as, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want the results for Duncan, the basketball player, but, like, I care more about Duncan. I care about Bam. I care about Hero. I care about y'all as people. Now, I want the results for the basketball player. Yes. I want the results for the player, but I care about the person. You know what I'm saying?
That takes me to, we've told a story on this podcast about Duncan's welcome to the NBA moment.
Did you see that?
There's the one where he tried to box me out?
Yes.
Yeah, what the fuck was he thinking?
I remember this.
I told him that. I was like, Duncan, this ain't what you want. I know I'm old, and I'm like the last guy on the board, but you're going to get fucked up down here. I think I remember saying that. I was like, I get it. Like, it's like two people in front of me, but you probably want to go with them first. Don't come to me.
Do you feel any sympathy when you're just ragdolling the new guy?
Hell no. I'm preparing for my 2 minutes I might get the next game.
Yeah.
Shit, they gotta be exciting 2 minutes like the last game I got. They gotta be exciting fucking 2 minutes.
We gotta talk about those two minutes.
Yeah, I gotta get ready. So yes, if Duncan coming down, I'm gonna knock his ass down, I'm gonna go get the rebound.
And that's exactly what it was, because I think it was Hassan on one side.
And he came to me. I'm like, Dunk, you probably want to go over there.
In hindsight, I would have stayed over there for sure. Because at least, like, Hassan, if I, like, get into his legs early or whatever, he might just kind of check out.
Yeah, he was on a mission.
And as soon as he saw that I chose him over Hassan, oh, man, it was over.
You might as well have been Tyler Hansen.
Yeah, he got me fucked up. You're looking at the wrong one right here.
Yeah, he didn't fucked around and fucked up today.
So you referenced the 2 minutes that you got. I was at that game in Miami.
Oh, okay.
The place just absolutely exploded you just got up to check in.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even getting to,
I mean,
the
I
got
to credit Spo. It's crazy because he threw me in early. You know what I'm saying?
He
threw me in early.
Well, into the first quarter.
Yeah, I didn't suspect that. You know what I'm saying? He kind of went with me early. You know what I'm saying? I mean, me and Spo been through a lot, man. So our relationship is like, like, we can't be broken. We done been through the bottom. We done been mad at each other. We done been on the same team. We done evolved to now, like, we just got a great relationship. It's symbiotic. We don't have to say it. We can just feel it. I could look at him. He can look at me. But he looked at me and shit, I was ready.
Did you go in there knowing I'm going to make this presence felt?
Nah, I play, I'm in practice every day with these guys. I get my shots up. You know, I play one-on-one with Jimmy. You know what I'm saying? So it's not, when I go in the game, it's not like I haven't played in a while. I know people don't see me actually out there on the court. I fucking shoot a basketball and play pretty much every fucking day. Right. You know what I'm saying? So when I get out there, you know what I'm saying? As long as my body is in the right position and everything is good, I can take care of business. But the corner jumper, I shoot that shit with my eyes closed. I ain't gonna never be able to miss that. Yeah, I'm not missing that. Yeah, I'm not missing that. You know what I'm saying? And my rebounding, just stay on your toes and keep moving. You know what I'm saying?
We said you were on pace for like 48 points and 20
rebounds.
That
was the one thing about getting ejected. I would have loved to have seen you play that out.
I fucked that up.
I mean, I would never take away that moment.
I thought about it in my head. Should I let this go? If you see when I fell on the ground, I thought for a second. I said, fuck. And I just couldn't let it go.
Right.
I just couldn't.
I get it.
I thought about it, though. At least I thought about it.
Let me ask you this. If it was somebody else other than the person that it was, would you have been more inclined to let it go?
Hell no. But that has something to do with it. Because he throw motherfuckers down. I watch him throw somebody down every game. Literally just toss motherfuckers to the ground. That's not even a basketball play. You know what I'm saying? It's not even just throwing motherfuckers down. That's not even basketball. I'm not even finna throw me down. I'll poke your fucking eye out.
That was one of the most legendary moments. It was my favorite moment in American Airlines.
Bo just looked at me and shook his head. I'm like, fuck, Bo. I know, man. Just fucking put me out here 2 minutes, man.
We got back in the locker room. I don't know if it was halftime or end of game, but you had already changed and you were just waiting for us, happy that we won. And,
yeah, man.
And you were just like, man, I'm sorry, guys.
If y'all would have lost, I'd been fucking pissed, bro. Like, what the fuck, man? But at the end of the day, I know who I am. And that's why I always tell you guys, man, don't take no shit from nobody. Stand up for your fucking self on that court.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Don't even let a motherfucker get in the habit of fucking you over and pushing you down and knocking you down and just doing a little underhanded shit. Don't even let a motherfucker get in that habit. Don't even get that shit in your head. It's not going down like that.
Yeah, we've had that conversation.
I'm telling you, people remember that. They remember if they was able to punk you or push you or whatever they was able to do. They remember that. So don't even give them that. Don't even let them start that habit. We're going to start this shit today.
Episode 4, Willie Cauley-Stein.
Speaking of Kentucky, I remember Coach Cal came to a couple football games, which is just an insane thought in retrospect. Like his recruit that he's bringing in, he's going to watch play football. Like, I can't imagine that he's standing on the sideline excited that you're out there. Like, I'm sure he's supportive, but there's no way that he feels comfortable with you running around at 7 feet and there's, you know, 5'8" guys coming at your knees.
Yeah, I don't know, bro, because it was like him and Frank Martin was at the game we played North. And you know how that rivalry was anyway. So, like, we were just – and we were good. So, it was like we're trying to smack these dudes. And I remember coming in on, like, I had a crack block. And I lit this dude up, bro, right into their feet, bro. And they were so high. I look up, and they were so hype. They was yelling with us, bro. And I was like, oh, shit. This is what they want to see. This is what they want to see. So, I started talking my shit. This is what they want to see. Bro, we end up smacking that team, though, so it was lit.
Episode 21, Brian Scalabrine.
And I would say, to be honest with you guys, going back, you know, like in psychoanalysis, I never as a kid felt comfortable ever in any environment except for when I'm playing sports. Like in school, I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, like talking to people and like doing small talk. Like, what am I doing with my life? I go and play sports. It's like, oh my God, this is like the greatest thing ever. Right.
Yeah.
So that environment is still the exact same for me. I'm never afraid. I gotta say, I was afraid one time. I fouled Shaq so stinking hard, I thought he was gonna kill me. But besides the time I fouled Shaq, and which is a funny story. Besides that time, I've never actually been afraid of anything. You know, I just feel like that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to play sports. This is what I feel natural out there. I love it. I love the communication. I love the trash talking. I indirectly trash talk through people and they had no idea that I'm trash talking them. It's so great, right? So besides that, so when I go into these environments, like people know who I am. I go up, I dap it up and I go out there and I go and I hoop and I don't really care what people think or say or anything like that. It's just how I'm wired. So that was fun to do. But going back to the challenge, played in this YMCA rec league. I dropped 60 in a game. And it was like, I wasn't trying to brag or anything like that. I was just like, yeah, I had a good game. I had 60 the other night in my rec league. People got immediately started tweeting, oh, you suck, Scal. I'll beat you. I'm like, listen, I may suck for an NBA player. Like, those guys are pretty good. But I don't suck compared to you. Like, you suck compared to me. I suck compared to Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook and those guys. So let's just do it. So we invite the city of all New England can send in their videos. I just, went one-on-one against five different guys. And they scored about what they don't recognize, and what you and me do recognize. When you're in the NBA, there's all kinds of tells, right? Like, if a guy puts his hand like that, you know what he's going to do. If a guy does a hesitation, you know what he's going to do. Well, all that stuff is like in real time in the NBA, you got to be so on top of the reads. It's not speed. You can't look at me and say, like, my brain is slow. Like, my brain is fast. Like, my body might be slow, but I have to read whether a guy's going to shoot, drive, go to the middle, go, pass. If you're not reading those things, you're not playing in the NBA. And there's countless guys, 6'10", athletic, strong, and they don't read like the intricacies of the game. They don't see a hesitation dribble. They don't move until the ball is passed. Duncan, I'm moving when the ball is on the gather. If I'm not, I'm dead. I'm dead in the water. So, like, that me having to analyze a game like that allows me to play a guy one-on-one. It's like I can literally, like, in the middle of his inside-out move, think what I'm eating for dinner and still challenge his shot, It's not like I'm doing this against this high-level these people. So, anyways, I do that. I watch him. Most guys who scored on me, they scored the first or second possession. And then once I figured him out, it was like, I've seen this 1,000 times. You like to drive left, go right. You like to step back right and all that. Like, I know that, like, within 3 possessions. These are players I've never played before. And then the sheer size of being 6'9", 250, it's tough for people. So that's how it all played out. And, it wasn't really that challenging.
There's a legendary quote that came from that, which is that I'm way closer to LeBron than you are to me.
Yeah.
which is so incredibly true also. And it just needs to be reiterated. Episode 34, Hasan Minhaj.
You know what I love about sports? It's really beautiful to have things in life that so matter but don't matter.
That's great.
Because the world is filled with all these things when, oh man, I'm about to get like deeply philosophical. The world is filled with all these things that are, the stakes are so real. So once you become an adult, this is where like I realized, I was like, oh shit, like the world just gets very real very fast with like mortgages, wives, children, 401k, all these just like things in life that are very real. Like, if you don't handle it, it will come back and destroy your life, right? Like, yeah. Nobody tells you about these things, but like adulthood comes at you fast. And I just think our generation, I think we were babied too much. Nobody gave us financial literacy. Nobody like really taught us how to move in the world. All those things are super stressful. What's really beautiful about sports, what I love about sports and sports fandom is people can be Kings fans, Lakers fans, Red Sox fans, Yankees fans. They can yell at each other. They can curse each other out and they'll be like, let's get a drink. You can't do that with politics. You can't really do that with religion. You can't really do that with like, if you talk about money, there's so many topics where like, once you get into it, it'll just like tear apart the fabric of society. Yeah. It changes everything. Yeah. Like everything gets super heated. Sports is the one thing too. Also where like, if you were to take all of our stories, everybody in this room, our stories are so wildly different. And I'm sure there's a ton of global, political, social, economic, all baggage that defines our lives. But through sports, like we just have this like entry point. It's really beautiful. And I don't think enough people talk about that as like a foundational part of society. Like, I think even if a nuclear missile were to like destroy Earth completely and we had to like recreate society from the ground, there would still be sports. There would still be some form of like politics to establish, you know what I mean? But this would be one of the tent poles of society. And I think it's one of the healthiest, in my opinion.
I love the matter so much, but doesn't matter.
You need things that matter, but don't matter at all. Which is why I was like, why does having a favorite TV show, a favorite movie, or a favorite like sports team matter so much? Because it's dope to have things in life that so matter, but right. do not matter at all.
It's, I will say, it becomes an interesting twist when it becomes your profession.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden it does matter because it's tied into all those things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, like I'll go through a stretch, and I've gotten better at this throughout my career. Yeah. But I used to go through a stretch where I couldn't make a shot, and I would just be like, I'm a very self-deprecating individual.
Yeah.
And I would go to like a dark place, or like as a team, we go to a dark place.
Yeah.
And it's always in those moments that there's like the voice in the room, whether it be, you know, Coach Spo or a leader of some sort,
yeah.
to kind of like bring in some perspective
right.
of like, all right, we're all playing basketball, a child's game. We're putting a ball in a hoop,
yeah.
and this is our livelihood. And it's like, it's back to that thing of like, okay, this is, has this crazy sense of urgency, because in the moment you can't tell a fan watching a game that it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
because
matter.
It matters.
Yeah. yeah.
But then actually when you step away from it, it's like, all right, but it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. But the best people, like, oh, we can curse on that. We can curse
yes.
on that.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I'll take it back. I'll take it back to just my industry. The best artists do not give a fuck. Like, if you're ever in New York City, you got to go down to the Comedy Cellar, because on any given night, some of your favorite comedians will pop in. Kevin Hart, Chris Rock, Chappelle, Michael Che, Michelle Wolf, like comics that I love that I think are doing such great work will pop in, and they'll do 15, 20, 25 minutes. And you'll see there's a bunch of comics that are like so trying to get on, that are like trying to make a name for themselves. Like yeah. they so want to pop. And the best comics are the ones who, like, from the moment they put they take the mic out of the mic stand, they don't give a fuck about anything. They actually don't even like care that like they're in a basement and like there's 80 people here tonight and there's a couple here. They almost just treat it like it's like just pure raw human expression. Like when I see Dave pop in, there's times he'll still have a backpack on. Like he yeah. hasn't even fully taken his backpack or jacket off. He's just like, it's like he's just having a conversation with 80 people. And I'm like, the degree to which he does not give a fuck is so high, and everybody here can tell. But I think that speaks to something even deeper, which is in performance, he's in a state of flow.
Yeah.
He's just flowing. And I wanted to ask you guys as athletes, like, so much of what comedy is, it is a cerebral art. But then when I talk to, and now I've pivoted to a new chapter in my career, acting and being on set, and I'm season two of The Morning Show comes out Friday, September 17th. So watch it.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be out.
Yeah, it'll be out by the time you guys see this.
Came out last Friday.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, it'll be out. Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, Billy Crudup, just up and comers that you haven't heard of, myself.
All right.
No, but one of the things that I noticed with being on set with really great performers is their ability to drop into a scene like this. And so much of what I realized in performance is it is a physical act. It's actually not a heady mental thing. And I think the thing that fucked me up the most when I was playing high school basketball and trying out for the team, it's so dorky to say this in front of an NBA player, but like I so cared, like I cared too much. Like I so wanted to impress the coach and like try to get on, and like I got to pass and then screen. And then there'd be people who didn't fucking pass, and they're just like, man,
go who?
They go, fuck the rules. And they would just like launch.
Yeah.
And like, I remember coaches like, these are the rules. And I'm like, no, there's two types of people. There are rule followers, and I think that's that like 80% of the league. And then there's just straight up rule breakers that like, are like, fuck the. Yeah. Now you have to be talented enough to do it, otherwise you look like a complete idiot.
100%. Right.
But there is a level of that, like, I truly don't give a fuck attitude that informs like the flow in which you play.
Episode 20, Mikal Bridges.
We beat them and go to Final Four. This is what the part Dunk is not gonna like. Go to Final Four, no, we was either gonna play Kansas or Duke. Kansas ended up winning. I knew it was going to be tough, but we just got hot from three. And once we beat Kansas, we saw the other side. It was like, okay. Loyola Chicago, goddamn Michigan. I'm like, motherfucker, we already won the goddamn
trip. Wait, hold on. That's not fair.
Come on, man. We had it rolling. We had it rolling. What are you talking about?
We don't give a damn.
We had it rolling. You're talking crazy over there.
I'm just saying, as a player, bro, we beat all these West Virginia, Texas Tech, Kansas, and you got Loyola Chicago and a high rate of Michigan, like that y'all just got hot at the, I'm like, oh, hell no, they got no chance.
Wow. Listen, I'm here for the Loyola shade, but I won't stand for the Michigan shade. That you crossed the line with that one. I will say, like, you guys had so much firepower. It was ridiculous. And it's like one of those things where, like, there was no way all of you guys weren't going to play well. So one of you guys was going to be going. Two of you guys probably was going to be going. Yeah. And then it just so happened against us, it was damn near everybody. And it was the opposite for us. I can't believe we're still talking about this game because it's like, I don't know if you know if you remember this. I didn't score. It's straight goose egg. My last college game. Yeah, brutal, man. And at that point, I thought I was done. I was like, yeah, I'm headed over to Latvia to play for, you know, 500 a week. I didn't think I was gonna be in the NBA, so that was really that was my Super Bowl. Yeah, you guys had, you know, you with your All-American and Dante going first round and you going first round and Amari going first round, everyone's first round. I'm over there just, you know, trying to get by. But
maybe,
yeah,
that,
man,
motivated that, you, bro. Maybe that motivated you. Maybe
just
that
added to the chip.
Maybe like, never let this shit happen again. I'm about to be on some shit. And that's what happened. Dunk ain't 100%. Gonna pick up.
That's true why I bring story. It up. We can laugh about it now. I wouldn't bring it kind up if Duncan it's was still, playing
it's,
in Latvia.
It still hurts a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry, bro. I didn't mean to bring that up, bro.
No, it's all right, man. It's, you know what?
I asked the question, so I'll take the blame.
The goose egg is crazy.
Bro, you're telling me.
Hey, bro.
Stop. Episode 18, front of show. I think there's actually no denying that the general talent in the NBA is at an all-time high.
Right.
Like the things that guys in the NBA, and this is a generality, like speaking, you know, all-encompassing, the things that guys in the NBA are able to do across the board, it's just levels higher
right.
than what was capable. And that's not to say that guys were not incredible and the numbers that they put up weren't incredible. Like, I'm not here for the, you know, Michael Jordan played against plumbers argument. I don't agree with that. That's not what I'm saying either. Right. Those guys are still world-class athletes in their own respects, but I just think it's different.
Yes, you've got fives now shooting threes and taking guys off the dribble. And
I think it's funny too when people would, like, people defending the Michael Jordan playing against plumbers would use, okay, well, this is LeBron's competition. It'd be like a picture of myself.
Yeah.
And like, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, this is who LeBron had to beat to get a ring. That's a humbling meme.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, casually scrolling through social media, you know, in the off season and coming across that one. That's a fun one.
Just you trying to take a charge on LeBron, just like in the fetal position on the
floor. Yeah, it's like, all right, Michael Jordan played plumbers. Well, LeBron played Duncan Robinson. Episode 16, Joe Ingles.
You can walk out on the court and you can be whoever you want to be. You can be as a great, like, you could be the quietest dude on court, but like on court you could be like, it might just be who you are, like talking shit and playing aggressive. Like, you don't seem like a guy that would talk shit, but I've seen you like mouth off to some guys too and give some fist pumps in people's faces. Like, oh, we've all. And I think that's the beauty of like playing in the NBA. Like, you can be who you want to be on the court.
I'm so glad that you brought this up, Joe, because it's a running theme on this podcast.
Oh, he's so shit. I've seen that. Yeah. Don't worry.
Thank you. Good. Because he continues to refuse the fact that he's a shit talker. He says that it's just more talking to himself, but it seems
the worst excuse you can make.
It seems pretty obvious to me that he's a shit talker. So I'm glad that you're helping validate that.
No, 100%.
It for me, and I've made this point a couple times, but I always try to be calculated in it too, in that there are some people that if you take it to that place, it's not going to end well, at least for me. And I have a certain level of awareness of like, all right, if I poke the bear on this person too much, like, it's just not going to end well for me.
I think Russ is one of those guys. Like, you go at him the wrong way or whatever, say the wrong thing or get into it with him on a dead ball or like whatever it is. It takes him like 1 second and he can go for 20, 20 and 20. Like, we've seen that before. Like, it's definitely a, in 7 years now, I've learned who this, like, I ain't messing with like James Johnson. Like, no way. You can say whatever you want to say to me. I'm running the other way.
I think, JJ is a great example. He was a teammate of mine in Miami. He just so happens to be like legitimately the greatest human being in terms of like the nicest guy, one of the best vets I've ever had. But exactly that. I think it would probably be considered that he's the most unanimously feared across the NBA.
I hope so. Except the kid from Charlotte Hornets trying to fight him. The twin brothers, one of them trying to fight him.
That was a bad business decision. I think Jimmy's up there as well. It's funny that you and Jimmy. I actually remember a story of, I think it was earlier this year. It might have been last year though. You guys kind of got into a little bit of a tussle, and I remember a conversation between the two of you, and you were actually like, "Let's just not go there." Like I'm trying to keep the money in my pocket. Like I just don't want to do the double.
The funny thing about that is, so we got into it for like years after years after years, and I always do this like stupid old man stretching routine at the half court before the game because I don't need to keep running. I need to actually just stay warm. And he walked over to me pregame and was like, "Yo, let's just like call it quit. Like, let's just play. Let's not get teed up today." And then that kind of became like a bit of a running joke where he'll either say it to me or I'll say it to him nearly every time we play each other now. And since then I don't think we've been like double teed up or whatever since. And like having a few conversations with him and hung out with him, but like in the bubble, obviously you have way more conversations with guys and all that. And I spoke to him a bit there, and he's an avid coffee drinker as well. So we had a bit of a chat about that and stuff. And so, I think that like quote unquote beef is gone, but he's a hell of a player too.
Episode 5, George Niang.
It was my first year here. I think we played Golden State the second night when they, second day of the season. It was our second game. We had lost in Sacramento, I think the night before. And then we played Golden State, and it was like my first time like actually getting like real rotation minutes. Like Thabo Sefolosha was out with an injury, and coach had put me in, and my first shot like was from the corner in front of the bench, and it like, someone came out and closed out like super hard, and I shot it, and it like, you know, when like the corner like hits the top side of the backboard, yeah. And DeMarcus Cousins got up because he was on the worst. He was like, "Man, hell no! Don't you ever shoot no shit like that again, ever, ever." So I'm like, "Damn, man! Like my first time getting in, like coach believed in me. First quarter put me in, like, and I miss." And not only missed, but I hit like the side of the backboard. Then Draymond Green's like, "I got him." So, you know, he can like help in the lane with everything that's going on. So Ricky Rubio drives in there. Draymond Green cuts him off. He swings to me at the top of the key or like on the wing kind of. And Draymond Green like looks at me and like waves his hand as I'm about to shoot it. And I hit it. And I just remember thinking in my head, like, just do what you've done. Like,
yes, sir.
All the time. Just follow through. Hold your follow through. And I made it, and I looked back, and DeMarcus Cousins was like, and I ended up hitting like a couple more shots that game, and like we ended up losing on like a late game tip-in. But the thing that like gave me like the confidence to know like, hey, like you belong and like you can do this was like Quinn Snyder. He's like, he's one of the best dudes and best coaches around. And he texted me after the game. He's like, "I know we lost, but like I'm so proud of you. Like, man, you know, you belong out there, and like the way you handled yourself, I just threw you in there and you just kept on chugging and kept on going and you made winning plays, and that's what I love. I'm excited to grow and coach you." And that was like, man, the moment where like this journey is tough enough in the NBA, but the fact that you can have someone there to like be in your corner and they make like really big decisions, it was like huge for my confidence. And then from there on out, it was like once you have this swagger and confidence about you, I mean, the sky's the limit.
Episode 24, Ryan Anderson.
What's yours? Am I allowed to ask you guys questions?
Sure.
I
mean, we're running like an hour and 10 deep right now.
So we're going off the rails. All right.
I'll ask you each one question, okay?
Yeah, right. Please.
What's the most underrated Star Wars movie of all time? This is actually like... I'm a Star Wars nerd, so like to hear, maybe fact. He doesn't know anything about Star Wars, number one.
Right.
Number two.
No, I'm going to give you one. I don't appreciate the disrespect that Attack of the Clones gets.
Wow, that's a great answer. He knows what he's talking about.
Because here's the thing. I was a big Star Wars kid growing up, had all the Legos, had the lightsaber. Like I was, you know, all in. And that's when I was a kid, that trilogy came out. So it's the most nostalgic for me. And it just gets shit on constantly.
It really does. It's not appreciated. Part of it was the Jar Jar Binks, you know, element in there.
Yeah, which isn't great in retrospect.
But I actually enjoy the one episode 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, agreed.
Quite a bit. Like it does bother me as well.
Yeah,
I like that answer.
Okay, this took an interesting turn. Yeah, okay. What do you got?
What is the most underrated flavor of cheese?
I'm trying to keep dairy out of my life.
You really?
Yeah, I'm trying. So. I've heard that goat cheese has significantly less dairy.
A little healthier for you.
Yeah, so I would say goat cheese.
Goat cheese, that's a great answer.
Yeah,
answer.
I like that.
You heard it first.
Wow. You got any more?
Yeah.
This is fun.
Doing this all
yeah, let's
all
right. do it. Come on, let's do it.
Okay. All right. What is the most underrated? I can't think of the top. Oh, no, I got it. What is the most underrated Disney Channel original movie?
Oh, that's a great question. Right? Yes. I want to answer that one.
Yeah, let me think. Smart Home.
No, you only get one.
Smart House. No,
you
come
only
on.
Get one.
Smart House. Wait, no, hold on.
You only get one.
Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off.
Wow, I don't even know what
that's
that is.
Terrible answer. Awful.
You can't. If you haven't heard of it,
I got Brink. So I'm a
motocross. I love motocross. I was before the times. You
wait,
know,
Brink is in motocross. Roller.
No, I said Brink's great, and I give my opinion.
Okay. I'm a soul skater for sure. Davis is more Team X-Blade. I'm a soul skater.
The shade.
You know, my wife actually got, like, back in the day when there was, like, AOL, like, instant messaging.
Yeah.
She got an instant message from the Brink guy.
Like the person who plays the main character?
The main character of Brink.
Wow.
Tried to hit her up. It's true.
Wow.
Do we have beef?
With Brink, is it no longer allowed to be my favorite?
I wish they had dated so we could have hung out.
That would be great.
Pretty cool. So let's keep going with this.
Yeah, okay. I'm having fun. Because
Duncan, you have to go now.
Yeah.
I have to.
No, I have. I'll get you, and then maybe who asked the original?
Let's just keep these going.
Okay. What is. Okay, no, this is a good question for Duncan.
Okay.
What is the most underrated city to travel to? In the NBA.
That's great.
You've been asked that one before.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the hot spots are obviously New York.
He didn't ask for the hot spots.
LA, Miami.
He's
dodging.
So I'm leaving those off the list is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to say Toronto.
Good answer.
Toronto's a fantastic city.
Davis.
Yeah.
What is the most underrated... the most underrated thing that you've ever done while living in LA.
Oh my God.
Like something that would really surprise a lot of people, you know?
That what a question.
That's terrible.
It's not as good.
No. I can do this.
Why
I can do this.
Me ask all the questions.
Just give me a second.
Because you turn this into your thing.
Oh. I think it's my thing and I'm going to have a little gray wall.
Here's an answer for you.
Okay.
So this was maybe a year and a half ago. You know, have you heard of that blue algae that glows in the dark?
Yes, I've never seen that here.
100%. We went and we saw that. It was incredible.
You really made lemonade out of some lemons with that question.
Speaking of Disney Channel, it was like you were in a Disney movie. You step on the sand and it just lights up blue. You
run your hand through
yep,
it.
Yep, the waves are crashing and
I heard
it glows.
About that. It just wasn't intense.
Remarkable. It felt like it was fake.
It's a great answer.
It's a great answer.
I'm on fire over here.
Episode 15. Doris Burke. I want to start off, obviously your broadcasting career is well documented to some extent. We're going to get into that more, but I want to start off by actually talking about your playing career a little bit. So for ourselves and also the listeners, can you just shine a little bit of light on you as a player and maybe give us a little bit of a breakdown?
Yes, definitely. So you have the skill I was most envious of. I could get anywhere I wanted off the dribble drive. My handle was tremendous. I was comfortable with multiple bodies around me. I would be willing to embrace a double team to find the next pass. That kind of pressure wouldn't bother me. But I couldn't shoot to save my life. Do you want to know the stupid origin of my lack of confidence? Okay. So, and this is so silly, but so when I was 7, we moved from New York to New Jersey, and right next door is a park. And that was the origin of me picking up a ball. So I'm 7 years old. I'm the last of 8 kids. My parents basically say, go find something to do. And I pick up the ball at 7 and I never put it down. And I actually in elementary school was a pretty good shooter, good driver. My freshman year in high school, I get moved up to varsity around December, a Christmas tournament in the town next to me on the Jersey Shore. And for some reason, I'm really nervous. And this other team is giving me free throw line jumper after free throw line jumper. It's my first varsity game dunk, and I just keep missing that free throw line jumper. And I quickly realized right after that, well, that's okay because nobody can keep me in front of them and let me go to the rack. And so I was a big driver and one throughout my career, you know, 1,000-point score in high school, 1,000-point score in college, but all while people were giving me this tremendous cushion. And it's like, you know how like people are like, you have the ball. They're like, find them, sprint, get them off the line. Me, they're like, shoot it. So that was my game. Dribble drive. Well,
a couple of things there. So it sounds like you're a classic park player in that, you know, you're probably playing with the double rims. You know, you got to get to the rim to be successful if you're going to be playing outside, especially in New York, yeah, or New Jersey. You never know which way the wind's going to be blowing. And I'll say this too. I think the hardest ones are the open ones. You know, it's the contested ones for me, yeah, that it's like, you know, you're just shooting freely. Yeah. The ones that, you know, you're getting covered can be challenging. Episode 29, Caron Butler. I need another, just anything you got, legendary Kobe story.
Man.
One that comes to mind.
We was in Charlotte. I never told the story. We was in Charlotte and we was in the huddle and he was like, the game was tied. It was only like 4 seconds, 3 seconds on the shot clock. And, you know, Rudy T is like drawing up all type of shit on the board and he swiped it off again. And Kobe said, fuck that. Just give me the ball right here. And he was like, whoever want to take the ball, I'm going to be part of history. And Lamar was like, I want to be part of
history. I'm going to grab the ball. All right, give me the ball.
He threw that shit in, man. Kobe hit the shot, blouses, game. It was just like, I was like, I looked at him. He was just like winked his eye in the moment. Like, yo, just whoever want to be a part of history, just throw the ball in. That shit's over. But that was him. Like, right, that was just who he was. And OG was different, man. He was different.
Episode 3, front of show.
So you saying that just reminded me of a story I want to quickly tell. You trying to link up with friends in cities when you're on the road takes me back to your two-way year where you were bouncing back and forth from the Heat in Sioux Falls and you played at the Garden in New York City. And this was early in the season. Oh, yeah. Like, this was one of your first games up with the Heat. And I happened to be in New York City. So we tried to connect after the game, but it was a late game. So I think you weren't ready to meet up until like midnight and you guys had lost and you got to play a little bit and you felt like you didn't play that well. Yeah. So we were trying to connect and we ended up meeting at Tao, right?
Yeah. So basically it was exactly that. We play the Knicks. We lose to the Knicks. We have a night, we stay over the night in New York and the next day we have an off day. It's a Saturday night in New York, mind you. We get back to the hotel super late. I actually went and grabbed dinner with Ryan Anderson. We just grabbed dinner quickly. And then I was going to meet up with you and another friend of ours. And you guys were at Tao, the restaurant Tao, mind you.
Restaurant. Yeah, right.
The
right.
Restaurant Tao. So I catch an Uber over there. I think it was like maybe a little past midnight.
Yeah.
And I'm texting you like, I don't know, guys, like, I think I should just go back and go to sleep. And you're like, no, come on, like, come on through, whatever. So I'm like, all right, fine. So I pull up to Tao, I get out of the Uber. I randomly see a staff member of ours, our shooting coach, walking a block across the street. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Like, a good thing I kind of missed him. I can just kind of stay anonymous. And then I walk downstairs into Tao, the restaurant, mind you, once again.
The restaurant.
And the entire Miami Heat coaching staff is walking out of Tao. And I am absolutely mortified. I'm so embarrassed that in my first year, I'm basically the optics of what it looks like is that I'm like having a night out on the town. I'm sure to them. I'm literally like the most innocent thing in the world. I'm going to see my friends. We're going to like basically, you know, drink water and catch up, like just the most innocent thing in the world. And I am so embarrassed to be seeing them. They ask me like, hey, Duncan, what's up? They don't think anything of it. Like, hey, Duncan, what's up? And I literally don't even know what to say. I freeze. I'm like, I'm just going to see my friends. And they're like, dude, we didn't even ask. Like, we don't care. Like, it was just so hard for me to wrap my mind around that. I go and sit down and have dinner with you guys and I'm a mess. I'm like, dude, this is over. Like, I'm going to get cut. They don't think I take my work seriously. This is it. We're done. We had a good run. You know, I played a couple games for the Heat and that's it. And yeah, I was just in absolute shambles.
I will never forget the look on your face when you walked in. Because you're right. We were drinking water, sitting at the table waiting for you. And you came in like a deer in the headlights. You sat down and you said exactly, you were like, guys, I think I should leave. I don't think I should be here. I just saw the whole coaching staff. They think I'm partying. Like, you were freaking out. And we tried to talk you down the or off the ledge. We were like, hey, they're here too. Like, what, you know, it's fine. This is what NBA guys do, I think. You know, we don't know. We're not in the league. But I just remember trying to calm you down and you being so worried. Because you're right. It was, there was no foul play involved, but you were none. Worried about the optics.
It's tough because I came from a program in Michigan where everything was micromanaged. You know, we had check-ins, we had bedtime, you know, you had to be in your room. And this, the world of like the freedom that comes with the NBA was like such a foreign concept to me. So I felt like I had broken curfew. There's no curfew in the NBA. Like, it's grown men, but like I couldn't wrap my mind around that. And then the other side of it was, of course, Chris Quinn, who's obviously on our staff, but also, you know, a close friend of mine, at that point realized that I was freaking out about it. And the next day we're getting on the plane and he stops me as I'm walking by him and the whole staff is right there again. And he's like, what's up, Duncan? Like, you don't take your career seriously? What, oh, you're no. just gonna go out partying the night before? Like, what? I'm like, it was an off day. Like, I'm like stuttering. I was just seeing my friends. Like, we weren't doing anything. He's like, dude, relax. Like, I'm just giving you a hard time. Like, nobody cares. But to the point where, like, I remember the next morning after running into them, calling my mom and being like, Mom, like, this might be it. Like, I might get cut. Like, we had a good run. Like, it's over. But it's just so funny. Like, I was just so, it's just sensitive. Like, I was just so concerned about like that I needed to come across as this like incredibly hard worker and that I was handling all my business and I wasn't, you know, you never needed to worry about any of that off the court stuff. But yeah, just a funny story. I appreciate you bringing that up. That was like a nightmare of a night in New York City. Episode 35, JJ Redick.
I posted a video the other day on Instagram of me shooting in Miami's practice gym. And you came at me for it being more of a push shot than a jump shot. And I just wanted to know, are you spending your time overanalyzing people's jumpers a lot? Or was that like a singular event?
My Instagram feed has a lot of basketball content on it. I think that's the first time I've commented on someone's jump shot. I would say this too. Duncan, correct me if I'm wrong here. So you really shouldn't shoot at the very top of your jump shot. Now, some guys do. Doesn't always turn out what great. Some guys shoot on the way down. That usually turns out horribly. So you're supposed to shoot on the way up, but it's like more towards the top. Davis's shot, it's like almost an exaggeration where he pushes it out there and then jumps. You know what I mean? It's just the timing's just a little off. The mechanics are a little off.
JJ, I just want to say these disparaging words about his jump shot. I mean, this kid had your jersey. This kid had your pictures of you on his wall. I'm broken. You were the end all be all of a young Davis Reed. Hopefully one day I can be like JJ Redick, and here you are just, you know.
If you want to portray me as an asshole, that's fine. In my defense, when you guys posted Davis's mixtape earlier last season, I gassed that up. I put like 93 premium gas in that thing. I put it out on social. I made some comments, all very positive. I was very impressed with his game. Extremely gifted alley-oop passer to Willie Cauley-Stein.
That's a fact.
It's like my golf swing. It's not always about how things look, right?
Thank you.
There's no pictures on the box score.
Well, here's
there's
the
no
issue.
I don't box score.
I don't really have the results to back it up either. That's the thing. But no, you'll experience this, JJ. That I don't shoot anymore. Yeah. So you got to understand, after like 10 NBA threes, I can't feel my shoulder. So it's really just taking everything I have to get it to the rim at this point.
I've shot three times since the season ended, two of which were at the Sag Harbor Park. The other time I was, it's four times, because two times were with my kids at Sag Harbor Park. One time I was a little blazed and had a few glasses of wine and played horse against these teenage high school kids. They were awesome. I had to be on my A game. Luckily, I made like 17 out of 20 shots and beat them, but I was down to the last letter. And then the fourth time was recently on a farm, this place called Hank's Farm in Watermill, New York. Take my kids there, apple picking. There's a pumpkin patch. There's apple cider donuts. It's a great time. This year, they put up an outdoor basketball hoop there, and I thought I'd get some shots up. And I hadn't touched a ball in several weeks. And again, this is now 4 months of really not shooting, and I could not make a shot. My first four shots hit the backboard. They say it's like riding a bike. Apparently, it's not.
Episode 39, Zach Lowe. Anyway, Zach, thank you very much for joining us. Certainly a joy to have you.
No, hold on. Don't let me go yet. Okay, that's very nice to say. It's very nice to hear. I want to congratulate you on the well-deserved contract that you signed. And more than that, on carving out a legitimate starting role for years now on a team that's really, really good, that made the finals, that has ambitions of making the finals this year. And everybody is like, oh, what a feel-good story, Division III, lightly recruited. Like, it is a feel-good story, but it's also like, you're just a good NBA player now. Like, we all that stuff is still part of your journey, and it matters, and people can still look at you as the plucky up-and-comer if they want, but it's also time to look at you as just like a good NBA player. And so I want to congratulate you on that. I know how much work it is. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. It's been a fun process. Absolutely. I actually remember I was talking after we met for the first time in the Barclays. My agent called me, Jason Glushon, and he was like, "I can't believe you called Zach Lowe Mr. Lowe when you first saw him." And that's right. I called you Mr. Lowe because I was a fan of your writing. But it's interesting. We've come a long way since then. Thank you all for listening to our best of 2021. Rest assured, the long shot is coming back with vengeance in 2022. See you next year.